Bibles to Matthew 18, please. We're going to spend our first portion of our sermon there this morning. Matthew 18. Before we begin this morning, I just want to, you know, Charles said it in the announcements, but I just wanted to say a thank you to all of you who helped out last weekend. Last Sunday night, I asked whoever was tired to raise their hands, and I think everyone's hand was up last Sunday night after such a busy weekend. I mean, if you think about it, we heard six sermons in 3 days. We, at least here on two of those days, had about 45 minutes worth of singing, plus our normal Sunday singing. Plus, we had an extra singing at the Kirchner's home on Saturday night. Two potlucks, just going all day. And it was a very, very busy weekend, but it was, I think it was a very powerful weekend. The young people that came benefited from it. You know, we're looking forward to next year. But, you know, Charles and Lalo came to talk to me on Tuesday in the office, and I talked to Charles, and they both said, how did it go? They weren't able to be here. They were out of town. And I just said, our people went above and beyond. And I really think that. I had members from Sunnyvale say that they're not going to go to their potlucks anymore. They just want to come to ours. And then Josh, and this is just, you know, I don't think he would mind me telling you. Sunday night, as him and his family were getting ready to leave, they pulled me aside and they said, this is probably the nicest congregation that I have ever preached in. And I don't want you to think, because most of the time it's my family or visitors I have in my apartment that I say, they said you guys are just so nice. Here's a visiting preacher from another congregation who goes all over the country preaching, and he says, this is one of the nicest congregations I have ever preached in. And I think he meant it. And so, you know, pat yourselves on the back for just an excellent weekend, and thank you all again for anyone who participated. If you didn't participate, you really missed out. And hopefully next year you can participate. All the sermons are online, and I suggest you go listen to them there. But just a great weekend, and thank you for all who helped out so much. Let's. I'm just going to get right in. Normally I have a nice story or something to go along, but I want to get right into the story from the text this morning, because I think it packs a punch that a lot of us don't really understand the literal meaning of some of these numbers that we read about. But you know the story, and it's the parable of the 10,000 talents. Let's go ahead and read the story from Matthew chapter 18. We're going to start reading in verse 21. This is coming off of one of the most famous questions that has ever been asked by Peter. And you'll recognize this question, and many times we stop after Jesus' answer in verse 22. But he then goes into a big, long story to illustrate this. So let's get into the text. Matthew 18, verse 21. Then Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but to 70 times seven. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. But as he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold, with his wife and children and all that he had, and the payment be made. The servant, therefore, fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of the servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave him the debt. But the servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And he laid hands on him and took him by the throat, saying, Pay me what you owe. So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will pay you all. And he would not, but went and threw him into prison till should the debt be paid. So when his fellow servants saw what had been done, they were very grieved and came and told their master all that had been done. Then his master, after he had called him, said to him, You wicked servant, I forgave you that debt because you begged me. Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you? And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. So my heavenly Father also will do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother and trespasses. I think we all have heard that story before. I'm sure maybe you've heard it growing up in a little kid's Bible class, or you've heard it just in passing, or maybe reading it yourself. But you read these numbers about the talents and the denarii and how much each person owed, and I think we kind of just glance over the story. And we understand the meaning of it. One person was forgiven. The one that was forgiven didn't show forgiveness to the next. But let's recount this story for just a second. This parable of 10,000 talents to me is one of the most interesting that Jesus gives. It comes on the heels of one of the most famous answer or questions Peter has ever asked. How many times should I forgive my brother? Up to seven times. And Jesus then says, not just seven, but up to 70 times seven. And he then illustrates it with the story of a man who owed 10,000 talents to his master. Some of you might not be math people, and that's okay. Just follow along and you'll get the gist at the very end. So in the, it would help if I turn this on. In the Old Testament, or in the New Testament times, you were paid one denarius for one day's work. If you worked a whole day out in the fields or whatever it was you did, the normal going rate, the minimum wage, if we want to call it that, was one denarius. 600 denarii equaled one talent. So that's 600 days of work, just under about 2 years' days of work, equaled one talent. So follow me with this math. If this person owed his master 10,000 talents, that is 6 million denarii, which is 6 million days of work, which equals 16,438 years of work to pay off this debt he owed. How many of you have ever read that story knowing that before? Puts a little extra meaning behind it, doesn't it? And when his master said, you owe me this much money, you owe me 10,000 talents, that's 6 million days of work, that's 16,000 years of work. Knowing that the debt couldn't be paid, the servant fell down on his face and he begged his master. He said, master, just be patient with me. I will pay you everything. Could he really pay him everything? No. The master knew that. The servant knew that. But he begged. And he pleaded, and he said, please, just work with me here. I will give you everything I owe you. But it says that the master was moved with compassion, and he forgave him his debt. Brooke and I are paying back student loans currently, and any of you that have ever been to college, they put you on a 10-year payment repayment plan. Sometimes it feels like that 10 years is never going to get here. I pay every month, and I'm just thinking, how many more years until that 10 years is there, and I don't have to pay this anymore? I can't imagine that many years of paying back, of paying back, of paying back. Everything, and that would be paying back everything he made, let alone having to pay rent and a car payment and feed his family and whatever it was that they had to pay back then. But the master was moved with compassion and forgave him. So then this servant goes, and he has some people that owes him some money. And he finds someone that owes him not nearly the amount that was owed that he owed somebody else. He found someone that owed him just 100 denarii. Now, again, you look at the math up here. One denarius equals one day of work. So that was 100 days of work. That's doable, right? That's less than a year's worth of work, a couple years' worth of work. And when the person fell down on his face, asked for forgiveness, said the same thing that that other one just said to his master, said, be patient with me, I will pay you back everything I owe. And let's look at the facts. This is a lot more reasonable of a number than 10,000 talents. This is something he could pay back. The servant looked at this man that owed him money, and he said, you know what? No. You can be thrown in jail until you can pay me how much you owe me. Well, if you're in jail, can you work? No. Could he pay back his money? No. When the other servants heard wind of this, they went and told their master and said, hey, excuse me, do you remember that guy you just forgave of over 16,000 years worth of work? Well, he took someone that only owed him about a year's worth of work and threw him in prison because he couldn't pay right away, and the master was furious. And so the master went, pulled the other person out of jail, put him in jail, and said, now you can stay in jail until you can pay me what you owe me. I wonder I wonder how many of us have ever showed that kind of compassion on someone else in our lives. That kind of compassion to forgive somebody of such a debt that can never be repaid. When you look at the Bible, the Bible is full of these kinds of accounts where someone was moved with compassion to do something about it. I mean, you look at the kind of person Jesus was. Jesus was just this kind of person that everywhere he went, in Matthew 14:14, when Jesus went out, he saw a great multitude. He was moved with compassion for them and he healed their sick. And again, in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 34, when Jesus went out, and so Jesus had compassion and touched their eyes, and he saw these blind men. He had compassion on the sick and gave them health. In Mark 6 and verse 34, when he came out, saw a great multitude and was moved with compassion for them, he began teaching them many things. There he had compassion on their spiritual sickness. He gave them guidance. He began teaching them. And in Mark chapter 8, verse 2, he said, I have compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And so that's when we get the great miracle where he fed thousands and gave them nourishment. We look at some of his teachings, like the Good Samaritan, where it says in the book of Luke, but a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion on the man that was laying half dead in the streets. And so the Samaritan, with his compassion, gave this man aid with money, with food, with water, and with bandages. I mean, time and time again in the scriptures, you see this word compassion come up. You see Jesus have it. You see it in his teachings. You see it all throughout scriptures. But what is compassion? What does it mean to actually have compassion? And what are we supposed to do with it? Well, if you were just to look up the definition of compassion in the dictionary, you'd get something like this. Having sympathy and concerns for the sufferings and misfortunes of others. And I think that's how most of us would define this word compassion. That if I were to see someone in need, I would feel sorry for them. How many of us have done that before? You see a homeless person on the side of the street, you feel sorry for them. How many of you have ever been up late watching TV and a little puppy dog pops up on the screen? I hate those commercials. Brooke and I turn the channel almost immediately. I don't want to see all these animals staring with these big, sad eyes. And the point of those commercials is for what? For you to feel sorry for these animals. But here's the thing. When you look at what compassion is, the world defines it as just having the feelings of sympathy and concern for the sufferings and misfortunes of others. You see someone in a bad situation and you feel sorry for them. That is not the biblical definition of compassion. Now, that's part of it. But the biblical definition of compassion is acting upon those feelings. It's one thing to look and to feel sorry for. It's another thing to be moved, to do something about it. If you have passion for something, you're fired up, you're zealous, your passion takes over you, and it becomes who you are and what you do. And each one of the examples that we just looked at from the book of Matthew, the book of Mark, and the book of Luke, Jesus was not only moved with compassion, but he felt compelled to do something about it. That when he saw the people, he healed them. When he saw the blind man, he cured them. When he saw these people, he taught them. When he saw the people were hungry, he fed them. When the Good Samaritan saw the person laying half dead, he didn't just walk on by like the other two, but he took care of the person. And it's interesting to me that after the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke chapter 10, verse 37, Jesus says, go and do likewise. This was the point Jesus was trying to make over and over and over again. It's one thing to look and feel sorry for somebody. It's another thing to do something about it. When you look at the master in the story in Matthew chapter 18, and you look at the servant laying there on his hands and knees, begging for forgiveness, begging for patience, saying, I will repay everything, when he had a debt that couldn't be repaid, and it says the master was moved with compassion. The master had an option there to do one of two things. He could have looked down on this guy laying right in front of him, begging for forgiveness, probably tears running down from his face, and say, I feel sorry for this guy. He'll never be able to repay me, but he owes me, so... Such is life. Throw him in prison. But his compassion moved him to do something about it. And the master looked at this man and said, I feel sorry. I have sympathy. I have concerns because of his misfortunes. and I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to forgive him the debt that he owes me. How many of us have that kind of compassion towards people? How many of us can look at the world today and see people and their pains and their misfortunes, or maybe someone has hurt you in some way, and yet you're holding on to a grudge, and you're totally throwing out the hurt that the other people are feeling for what they've done or the situation they're in. You know, when you look at the world today, we've become numb to the hurt of others. We can look at someone and their misfortunes or their down times, and we've kind of become numb to how they're feeling. You know, Randy kind of hit the nail on the head this morning when he was talking in his Lord's Supper talk. We watch the nightly news. We watch things. We read the newspaper. You go on Yahoo or Google, whatever it is where you get your news. And almost every day you hear about murders, poverty, you hear about wars, and you hear about uprising and revolts, and you hear about Occupy this and Occupy that. You hear about all these bad things that are going on in the world today. And after a while, once you just kind of go bad, 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 it's almost just like, well, that's just what we come to expect, and we kind of lose all the sense of feeling that we should have towards these bad things happening. We can see a homeless man on the street, and we turn our heads, and we look away. We can see someone that's hurting and in pain, and we just turn our heads and keep on walking because we just don't care anymore. Or it's become a sight that we see all the time that it just kind of loses its significance. I want you to think about something real quick. Think about David. King David. A lot of people forget that he had a very rough road leading up to his reign as king. He was on the run from King Saul. And when he was on the run, he had no one by his side during some points. Now, at some times, he had an army and he had friends and he had his mighty men, but there were some points where he was all alone, on the run for his life. He had no one that cared about him. He had no one sitting with him in a cold, dark cave. And on the run from King Saul, he writes these words in Psalms 142, verse 4. He says, "Look on my right hand and see, for there is no one who acknowledges me. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for my soul." Here's King David. Mighty King David. One of the most powerful men that has ever stepped foot on this earth. And here he is, all alone, sitting in a cave on the run from King Saul, and he says, "I've got nobody. Refuge has failed me. No one cares for me. I'm all alone." These are sad words. Sad words that people still mumble today and still feel today. That when we look out at the world and we see all the pain and suffering, many people are feeling this way. You might be feeling this way sometimes. And we need to remember that even though we don't know people, they are still God's children. And God put them here on this earth, and God wants them here, and he wants them to be with him one day. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say that it's wrong for us not to care for other people. And I think that's the point Jesus is trying to get across through all these dealings and through all these scriptures that talk about it. It is cruel for us not to care about other people. There are so many people in this society that they care, all they care about are endangered species, rainforest, the ozone layer, cruelty to animals, and all these other things, but they've lost focus on the lost souls of God. Now, I'm not saying that those other things are bad to support, but what I'm saying is a lot of people put their care in other things and they lose their care for people. We should be conscious about all those things, but a lost soul is far more important than this world. Matthew 16, verse 26 says, God cares for each one of his children, and so should we. He gives us compassion and care, and we need to be able to give that compassion and care to others. And let me also say this, that it's also ungrateful not to care. You know, we expect compassion and forgiveness when we've done wrong or we're hurting. When we're kind of in that dark place that David was in the book of Psalms, we want people to come to us and help us, but yet we're not ready to go give it back to other people. Chances are you are here sitting in this room because someone cared for your soul. You're sitting here in these pews because someone loved you enough and cared for you enough to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with you. I've always heard a preacher say, one that's very close to me, we have been saved to save others. We have not been saved to sit in the pew Sunday after Sunday, Wednesday after Wednesday. We have been saved to save others. And how ungrateful it is of myself if I am willing to reap the benefits of someone doing all the hard work to save me, but I'm not willing to share that same gospel with somebody else. You know, there's many reasons that we should care for people. One, because it's one of the greatest works that I think God has given us. You know, Christ gives us a great commission to go and to teach the nations, to baptize them. This is our mission as Christians. And God brings us in so he can send us out and we can help others. James chapter 5, verses 19 and 20 says this, "Brethren, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save a soul from death and cover a multitude of sins." One of the greatest works that we can do is show compassion on other people. To see someone in their lowly estate, to see someone sinning, and feel moved by our compassion and say, I have to win them back to Christ. Christ came to seek and save the lost, Luke tells us in chapter 19, verse 10. And that should also be our mission. The church has made it their mission at East Foothill Church of Christ this year when we are focusing on seeking and saving. When teaching people, most times people will just try to jam stuff down everyone's throats. They want everyone to know everything about the gospel. But there's a saying, and many of you have heard this saying before, but it's so true. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's absolutely right. If I hated all of you, I could be saying some of the most profound things from the pulpit. I could be the best preacher in the world, which I'm not. I'm not trying to say I am. But I could be the best preacher in the world and saying all these profound things that can help you be a better Christian. But if I hated you and you knew I hated you, you wouldn't care what I had to say. You wouldn't listen to what I had to say. But when someone gets up here and you can tell that they're genuine, that they care, and I hope that's all of us. I hope that we can all come across that way, whether it's in front of a public assembly like this or to a neighbor or to a friend or to a family member. They'll be more willing to listen because they know you care. Just like we knew Jesus cared and he wanted to save us from the wiles of the devil. You know, we need to care because it gives a sense of fulfillment when we've done something for God. Many people want the abundant life that Jesus talks about in John chapter 10. They want to be fulfilled in life, but they don't understand how to obtain it. No one wants to live a wasted life. We all want our life to count for something. Jesus teaches us three things, or he uses three stories to show that there is no greater sense of fulfillment than knowing that you had a part in leading someone to Christ. That you had compassion on a lost soul, and you would not sleep or you would not rest until you knew that lost soul was found by Jesus Christ. He uses three examples. One was the lost sheep. Remember a shepherd who had 100 sheep? He had 99. One went away. He left all 99 just to go find that one. He had compassion on that one who was out there alone, who could be killed by a predator. And so he left the 99, and he had this sense of fulfillment when he found the lost sheep. He said, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost." He was fulfilled. He found the one thing he was looking for. And then Jesus tells another story about someone who lost a coin. Well, they had other coins, but they turned the house upside down looking for this one precious coin. And once they found it, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I lost." But then he brings all these to a head when he talks about a human being. He tells the story of a son who went away and who lived a life that he wanted to live. And when he came back home to his father said, "Make merry and be glad, for your brother was dead and is alive again." All three cases, these people had fulfillment when they found what was lost. How many of us can say that we are fulfilled when we know I have an active part in winning someone's soul to Jesus Christ? That we can rejoice together and say, rejoice with me because we have found a sheep that was lost. Rejoice with me because I found the peace that I lost. Make Mary be glad because our brother and sister, they were gone, they were dead to in sin, but we made them alive again through the power of Jesus Christ and the baptism of, for the remission of sins. There's fulfillment there. We should also care because caring makes us more like Jesus. Showing compassion makes us like Jesus. We back in the 90s and even the early 2000s, there was wristbands that said, what would Jesus do? And everyone wanted to do what Jesus would do. We try to be like Christ. Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Our Lord cared so much that he went to a cross on behalf of our sins. We cannot be like Christ until we learn to care like he cared. Jesus cared for little children. He cared for the poor. He cared for the weak. He cared for white people, black people, Mexican people, Asian people. He cared for aged. He cared for the sick. He cared for the dying. He cared for the lost. Jesus didn't care who you were, where you were from, or what you did for a living. He cared for you. And if he cares for me, who am I to not care for anybody else? Many things Jesus did while he was on earth, we cannot do. I cannot perform miracles. You cannot perform miracles. I cannot speak in tongues. You cannot speak in tongues. I can't heal a lame person or a blind person, and neither can you. But there is something we can do that Jesus did, and that show compassion on people and do something about it. He said that not even a cup of cold water would go unnoticed by our Father in heaven, Matthew 10, verse 42. Peter uses Jesus as our example. He says, for this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. What Jesus did, we should do also. And we should love and care for those people who Jesus loved and cared for. And then we should also care, because I've mentioned this already, we should care because someone cared for you. Someone cared for me. So many times in this world, we feel lonely and we feel like the world has turned its back on us. But that doesn't mean that we stop caring for God's people. Because I know there's one person that will never stop caring for you, and that's God. You know, we read a few verses a moment ago in Psalms 142 and verse 4 where he says, I'm alone, there's no one on my side. And David is saying, no one cares for my soul. Look at three verses later. In the same psalm, Psalm 142 and verse 7. Bring my soul out of prison that I may praise your name. The righteous shall surround me, for you shall deal bountifully with me. Some people might think David's a little bipolar. In one verse he's saying, I'm alone. No one cares for me. Everyone's left me. I have nothing to live for. But David recognized that God would never leave him. He recognized that now no one, maybe no one cares for me here, but God does. God cares for me. God has compassion on me, and I know that he will deal bountifully with me. We are God's chosen. He created us. He gave us life. He gave us all the blessings that we have to be thankful for. His compassion on us and his care for us motivated him to action. What does John 3:16 say? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. I think we can substitute love for something else. For God so had compassion on this world. He saw us in our lowly state. He saw us in our darkest times. And he had compassion on us. And so he did something about it. He sent his Son to die on the cross. It's time that we put our compassion in action. It's time that we not just have the feelings of sympathy for other people, but it's time we do something about it. And we could start by sharing with those people who have not. And I look at the church in the book of Acts. And the church in the book of Acts was remarkable in this case. Think about when they all came for the day of Pentecost, and Acts chapter 1 and 2, and really the first about third of the book of Acts, you have people that are there for the day of Pentecost. And if you don't know this, what happened was Jews would flock to the city of Jerusalem from wherever they lived. And while they're there celebrating Pentecost, They start being taught about Jesus. And many Jews are being turned to Christianity. 3,000 in Acts chapter 2. And yet they want to stay in Jerusalem. They don't want to go back home because they want to stay and continue to learn more about Jesus. How many of you have ever forgotten something on vacation? My brother, when he comes here, my older brother, always forgets a toothbrush. Always forgets a toothbrush. He's always having to go, can I take your car to CVS and get a toothbrush? Okay, you know. And, we all kind of celebrated because this time when he was here last weekend, he brought a toothbrush, which was nice. But all of us have forgotten something on vacation, right? And you can't live without it. You need stuff. So you have to go find stuff. A lot of these Jews came from, they're on vacation, right? They're here for Pentecost. They're not at home. But now they want to stay and learn more about Jesus Christ. Well, they're going to start running out of clean clothes. They need a place to stay. They only brought enough to stay a short period of time until they can get back home. And so what we see the church do is they start selling their own possessions. They start giving up their own things to give to people who need it. Essentially, what they were doing was they were taking care of the homeless. They were taking care of their brethren who needed help, whether it was money. Barnabas, the story of Barnabas, if you're here on Wednesday nights, I know VR has gone over this in class. The son of encouragement, he sold his land, and he gave the money. The church in Acts understood this principle, that they viewed somebody that needed something, and they made sure that they were going to get it. You think about the poor and needy, we read a little bit from that just a moment ago, that not even a cup of water would go unnoticed. But Jesus says, the tiniest things that you do can mean the most to your Father in heaven. Giving a cup, giving a bed to lay in, whatever it is. Jesus says, when you've helped the least of these, you did it to me. We need to put our compassion in action by you know, sharing more than just the physical things. It's not wrong to share the physical things, and I encourage all of us to, if God has blessed us with things, to help share those with other people. But we need to share more than just the physical things. How many of us can share things like our knowledge? That we see someone who is lacking in knowledge, and we say, you know what, I have compassion on them, and I need to share with them the knowledge that God has given me about this particular verse or this particular chapter, whatever it is. How many of us can share our passion for Jesus Christ and our talents and our strengths and our love and our example? We can share these things with other people. But so many times when we talk about compassion and taking care of other people, we just say, well, we got to give money to the poor. We got to help people who need it with the physical things. This is more than just physical. Some people, they don't have that much to give in terms of physical things. But we can all share these things. We can all share our talents with the church. We can all share our passion for Jesus Christ. And hopefully that passion can rub off on some people that need a little bit more passion. We can all share our strengths and our love and our example. But most importantly, we can all share the gospel of Jesus Christ. We can all teach Jesus. We don't need to get into the meat and potatoes of it. We don't need to be able to answer every question that the Bible has ever posed. But we can teach the simple gospel of Jesus Christ. That is the most important thing we can ever share. When people see us, are they seeing our light shining through? Are they seeing Christ living in us? This church for the past 7 months has been focusing on seeking and saving. And we've been talking about how the least we can do, the least we can do is have a part in sharing the gospel with someone else. Whether that's actually teaching, whether it's praying or inviting or whatever it is, we all have a part in sharing more than just the physical things. And when we are sharing all of these things, whether it's the physical blessings God has given us or these not physical blessings that God has given us, what we see is our compassion shows by when we start encouraging other people. There's a commercial. It still might be playing, and I forget. I think it's an insurance commercial or something. You've probably seen it and know better than I do. But it was one person is about to walk out in the street with a cell phone. And this lady grabs him real fast before he can walk out into the street and get hit by a car or a bus. And someone from across the street watched that. And so that as they're going throughout their day, they do something nice for someone else. And then someone saw that. And then so that person does something nice for someone else. And someone saw that. And then it comes back at the very end that the person who saw this other person do something nice was the person that grabbed that guy before he walked out into the street. And it was a nice commercial, but it just goes to show that by doing kind things for other people, by letting your compassion, you know, that lady could have watched that guy walk right into the street. Said, well, I feel sorry for that person, doesn't know where he's going. But she let her compassion grab him and do something about it. And what we see is that when we act on our compassion, when we put that into action, it's going to start a chain reaction. It's going to encourage other people to want to do more for Jesus Christ. When people see the compassion and care that we have for other people and how we openly share Christ with others, it encourages them. And again, that's why we read in Matthew 5:16, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. That when you are moved to do things, and when you are actually participating in what God wants you to do, it will move other people to act as well and glorify our Father in heaven. It encourages them to do good and follow the example. If you get anything from this lesson today, I know we've been over a lot. There's a lot more we could say on compassion and what we need to do. But I want you to get two things. One, that we must not close our eyes and ears to human tragedy. We must open our eyes and we must show compassion. Don't pass by on the side of the road like the priest and Levi. Don't go be the servant who has showed compassion, but yet went and threw someone else in jail that owed him just a little bit of money. We need to care for the lost souls of this world. We need to care for the people that Jesus cared for. 2 Peter 3, verse 9 says that God is not slack concerning promises, as some count slackness. He wishes that no man should perish, but all should come to repentance. And if God cares for every single person on this earth, so should I. We need to understand that the gospel is the greatest thing we can share, but don't stop there. Judges chapter 2, verse 10, we see a sad reality. That when one generation had passed away that knew God, another generation came up that knew nothing about God. And I think it's because that the older generation didn't have enough compassion to say, you need Jesus or you need God in your life. We are saved to save people. We are taught so that we can teach people. We have been helped by someone so we can help other people. We have been cared for so we can go care and share with other people. The greatest thing that we can give is Christ's gospel and the gift of salvation. That's the greatest thing Christ has given us, and that's the greatest thing we can teach to other people. But there is so much more that we can also give. In all of our actions, we need to rise and shine our lights for Jesus. I can only speak for myself here. But I think a lot of times I'm like that servant who is owed so much, who wants forgiveness from others, who wants love from others, but when it comes down to giving it to other people, it's a little bit harder. We beg for forgiveness from God, but yet we hold back from giving it to others. If you've asked for forgiveness, God has forgiven you of everything you've done. And now it's our turn to go out and to find people who need that same forgiveness, to have compassion on them and the sin that they're living in, and to do something about it. It's time that you and I get busy in God's kingdom. This church has been busy this year. 7 months, and we've been talking about evangelism, seeking and saving. We've been having classes. If you're here this morning and you have not gotten busy with this congregation, or you have not gotten busy with what God expects you to do in His kingdom, it's time to start. It's time to start showing compassion and love to the people around you. It's time to start sharing what you have, whether it's the physical blessings of this world or the gospel. If you're here this morning and you've decided that today's the day you want to give your life to Christ, you want God's love and compassion to rain down on you, we would love to baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit right now, so that you can then go out into this world, out into God's vineyard, and you can teach and preach the love and compassion that you have been shown. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, come forward as we stand and as we sing.